Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Well, they're known as a source of shelter and shade and sustenance, but trees are also critical for human survival in ways you might not suspect. In a nation that suffers from heat waves that kill more people than all the other disasters combined, trees are not only incredible multitaskers, making us oxygen, rain, storing carbon dioxide, but their cooling effect also brands them as lifesavers. Early this month, the World Wildlife Fund and Doctors for the Environment Australia launched a joint report on the health benefits of trees called Trees, the Forgotten Heroes for Our Health. Tonight we thought we'd take, pardon the puns, trees out of the shade and put them in the spotlight with an overview of not only their incredible health benefits, but also a broader look at the state of play for trees in Australia and where we're at in issues of clearing and regeneration and use of trees. Do we need to rethink our attitude towards trees, do you think? We'll also dig into some fascinating facts about trees, including the ways in which they communicate with each other. Once a wacky idea, but now seems pretty mainstream science. Our guests tonight are Dr. Stuart Blanch, conservation scientist with the World Wildlife Fund in Australia, who spends his days working to save existing forests and also to regenerate so-called lost forests. Stuart, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip. Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Also joining us on the program is Dr. Sabelle Day. Sabelle's a child and adolescent psychiatrist and mental health researcher from the University of New South Wales. Also part of the medical advocacy group Doctors for the Environment. Sabelle, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
So great to be here. Thank you.
Fantastic to have you with us too. Stuart, can we start with you for an overview of how trees are faring in Australia? Can you give us a geographical report card for trees?
I can, Philip. It's interesting, and there are lots of different sources of information about trees, but here are some, I guess, the top-level stats. So about a quarter of Australia's land surface is covered by forests and woodlands. The best estimate I've seen is that there are 24 billion trees in Australia. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of land. And in total, they cover forests and woodlands about 200 million hectares of the continent. We probably have about, on average, 700,000 hectares of land of forest cleared every year. A lot of that is regrowth forest, which we can come back to, but still a very large area. It makes us rank globally as the only rich nation with a global deforestation front. About two-thirds of forests occur on private land, which means farmers and grazers and communities and Aboriginal communities are essential to their conservation and restoration, while only about 17% of forests occur in national parks and other protected areas. We have about 22 billion tons of forest carbon stored in our forest, which, if you think about it, is probably about 40 or 50 times the average annual emissions from all of Australia's industry and carbon pollutions from energy and cars, etc. Mm-hmm. Interesting, at a sort of city level, Hobart followed by Brisbane have the most tree canopy. For example, Brisbane has about half of its city covered in trees, whereas Sydney is that, I think, about 15%. I think Melbourne's a bit lower than that, maybe 14%. Oldest tree, I think, is about 3,000 years old, a Huon pine deep in the valley in Tasmania. And we have about 10 million hectares of forest that are in what's called public native forest or state forest, of course, that is.
So are the number of trees in Australia falling?
Well, it's interesting. The area of land under trees is growing based on federal government data.
Right.
I haven't seen how they calculate that. So that's very encouraging. We want to be growing more trees than losing them.
In a net report card, we've got more trees. We'll have more trees next year than we do this year.
Well, net doesn't work. That's right. The problem with trees. If you try to work out their biodiversity value and their carbon value, it's good to have more area under trees. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bulldoze down or chop down a 400-year-old eucalypt tree, it's not replaced, all those values, by a sort of 4 metre high tree that's a couple of years old. So you can't sort of net them off. It is good. We need to be doing both, growing a lot more trees and reducing the amount of trees we're knocking over. So I try to sort of, we need fewer losses and more gains. And if we do that, we will be a world leader in trees.
Mm. I've heard it put to me, and in fact, I interviewed someone some years ago on another radio program about world trees, who, and I'd like your view on this. I said, look, you know, there's a widespread view that the world is losing trees. He said that's not necessarily the case.
I don't think that is necessarily the case. I
mean, but just explain this, because it's yeah. not a, okay. Because I think most people genuinely believe that that the world is losing trees in a net sense. But he said that's not necessarily the case. Explain why.
Well, the best estimates I've seen, and these are a bit controversial. They're a few years old now, but around the world, across all of planet Earth, there's an estimated 3.04 trillion trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of trees. And we are losing vast, vast areas. I think it's like 10 million hectares a year, the last estimate I saw, of particularly tropical forest in the Amazon,
yeah.
Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, the Congo. And that's the old trees, 200, 300, 400, 500 years old, sometimes 1,000 years old. That is a lot of benefits, homes for wildlife, storing carbon, making rain, binding the soil. So that's bad. That number's not come down quick enough, but there's a really great trend to have more trees planted and protected, allowed to regrow around the world. In the Sahel, sub-Saharan Africa, what's called farmer-managed natural regeneration, allowing farmers to let trees grow up, planting beans of trees around the world. These are all good. They don't replace knocking down old forests, but we might be having more trees growing. That's not the same thing, though, as saying we've got a net benefit to the world of the trees. We are still bulldozing too many, and of course with the climate warming, more burning and dying.
Okay, but that's interesting, though, isn't it? It's not actually the case that we've got fewer trees. I mean, in other words, the world is not chopping down trees faster than we're replacing them. In fact, the reverse. Sibelle, you want to jump in here?
Look, I do, because I think it's really important to make it clear that what I think Stuart's getting at, that a mature tree and its capacity to protect our health is very, very different from a small sapling that's just been planted.
I agree with that. So, no, I agree with that. And we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
But I just want to sort of set out the parameters here, because I think there is a belief, isn't there? Yeah. Sibelle, you probably agree with this, that most people, if you ask them the question, you know, are there fewer trees today than there were 50 years ago? Most people would say, 100%. Look at the rate they're clearing the Amazon, for example. But in fact, that's not actually the case.
Look, I'm in terms of the absolute counts, that's not my area of expertise. In terms of the amount of tree cover that we have in terms of protecting our health, we are clearly losing more than we can afford to lose. But yes, it's a slightly different question.
Stuart, is that true?
Because look, in some ways, it depends on the region you're in, Philip. Around the world, I've not heard that statistic. What I do know is that the organisation I work with, WWF globally, and two other great organisations, the World Conservation Society and BirdLife International, collectively they've got a goal to, it's called trillion trees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to protect trees that would otherwise be bulldozed or logged.
Mm-hmm.
And plant and allow to naturally grow another trillion trees by, I think, 2060, in addition to the 3 trillion we already have. So I think the idea there is to put back the trees that we have lost. So in some areas, we are having a lot more trees growing, because pretty much a lot of them have been chopped down or overgrazed or bulldozed, and to get any trees back is great. But I think when you look at the destruction of those big, old, stable tropical forests,
mm-hmm.
and ones as close to the home in, you know, the east coast of New South Wales, along the Great Divide, or in the Central Highlands of Victoria, in Tasmania, when you lose those big old trees, they're not replaced for hundreds of years by young trees that are growing. So what do they say about statistics? Look, you know, statistics and lies, and you've got to be careful about them, but
No, I agree. And I'm not
celebrate more trees.
Yeah, I'm not trying to produce a counter narrative here at all. But it's not as simple as it sounds, is it? To say that the world is chopping down trees faster than they're being replaced. We're chopping down the wrong kinds of trees. Sibyl, you want to grab here? Grab that.
Oh, look, I think it's just, yes, it is that difference between, so in the time it takes to read the sentence that we've got about the number of trees chopped down, two Australian trees would have been chopped down or damaged. So that's two trees every second, 140 every minute. And I know that math sounds like it doesn't add up, but it's because of rounding errors. And 70 million per year. So we are actually losing huge numbers of mature trees. But it is interesting when you realise that there are big efforts being made to plant. That's fantastic. But we also need to look at the total amount of actual capacity to look after our health that we get from the trees.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Stuart, do you think we're at a point in Australia where, I mean, a lot of these conservation arguments reach a tipping point where they could go one way or the other? Do you think in relation to the forest wars, which have been battled in Australia for years, I mean, I grew up with them in Tasmania, you know, and indeed they're still being fought in Tasmania, but not as fiercely and as in a wholesale way, perhaps, as they once were, because there has been, you know, substantial change of heart and policy. Do you think the forest wars are about to be over or not?
I think, and I tell my colleagues this and some of them, arch an eyebrow, I'll be honest, but I think essentially Australia will be out of native forest logging by the end of this decade.
Right.
But I think it'll be another decade, not more, before we are well and truly out of bulldozing.
Land clearing.
Primary forest.
Yeah.
And the battle is not over. And I don't like using those words, battle and war, because it doesn't help find a peace. And I want a peace for our trees. The impact of bulldozing every 5 years, the same patch of land as trees sucker up and grow and shade out grass so you get less grass production for cattle or sheep. That's not the big problem ecologically and for the climate and carbon and our rainmaking. It's the old trees, 10, 20, 50, 200 years old, that have regrown that you want to protect. So I guess I am puzzled why we're still having the wars over trees. It's easy to come up with the 10 points that Sibyl did and in the report we did a few weeks ago about all the benefits of trees. My estimate, I was just doing the numbers before I came on air, is that I think based on numbers from the Commonwealth Government and all the other data around it, we probably bulldoze and log nationally about 750,000 hectares of forest and woodland every year, and depending on how many trees per hectare of land, it's about somewhere between about 100 to 115 million trees every year get bulldozed or logged. And they all have a value to us. What I am puzzled about is when we treat solving the tree problem like we tried to solve the Murray-Darling Basin water problem a decade ago by John Howard, and the renewable energy problem by massive investment in renewables, I don't think we've, as a nation, said we need to come to a peace between the city and the bush, environmentalists and farmers and loggers over trees. And when we do, trees are such a great ally. They do so much for us that we often hardly ever realise that they're there.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that, our attitude towards trees too. So, Bill, I'll bring you in here too on this, because we typically think of trees as an economic resource. You know, there are principally in Australia, you know, in the past they've been cut for pulp. Still are, I suppose, aren't they, Stuart? Essentially cut for pulp.
Most of our hardwood trees go to pulp and
shipped as pulp and come and we bring it back as paper.
It's not smart. No.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about timber in a moment, but Sibyl, we tend to think of them in terms of this kind of economic unit without thinking of them in terms of their other asset to us as humans. That is the health aspect of trees, which are huge. We don't actually think of trees in that way, do we? We might have about an individual shade tree, but not overall. You see this all the time in the streets of Australia, where trees are hacked all over the place to fit power lines in and so on, as though the tree of itself has no particular value.
Yeah, yes. Look, I think that's really true, and there is a real sense that we've forgotten how beneficial they are.
Mm.
I do think that traditional owners and the wisdom of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people includes an ongoing knowledge of the value of trees, and I'll come back to that. But certainly from a health point of view, even with the kind of modern Western science lens, there's a whole lot of health benefits of trees. So the one you spoke about a little bit before around heat, it's amazing what cooling trees can do. And in terms of the heat effects, in Western Sydney, where we have big urban heat islands, and in other parts of Australia where there's been a lot of land clearing and development without tree cover, we have higher exposure of people to health harms from heat. So these are things which we don't necessarily see or think about, but more people are having heart attacks and strokes. More people are actually getting really distressed and really significant increases in people presenting to emergency departments when it's hot. And the having trees there, the shade is a sort of obvious one, but it's 10 to 20 degrees cooler under the shade. But there's other factors. Trees are also able to do this amazing thing called evapotranspiration, where they are holding water that they've brought in over time and able to release it in a hot day. And that can be as effective in a single tree. And Stuart, happy to be corrected if I've got this slightly out, but I think I'm reading that it was 10 air conditioning units were essentially about equivalent to one tree on a hot day, and that was the UN Environment Report. And if we think about that benefit that we get when we have trees nearby, it's huge, and it is life-saving.
Mm.
And there's a bunch of other things, but I'll let you come in.
Yeah, no, not at all. No, please. Because that's important. What do you think about this, Stuart? I mean, do we, or maybe we are rethinking our attitude towards trees? Because once upon a time, Australians would have looked at trees as an opportunity, to clear the land or cut them down and sell them. Do you think?
Well, we are coming to an accommodation with trees, and I think we are squeezed between the need to address the nature and climate crisis, as people would say, homes for koalas and gliders and all that, and cockatoos, and to preserve rainfall as we have more El Nino periods and more hotter, drier weather. But I'll be honest, I guess bear my soul a bit after the 2019-20 fires on the East Coast, I had a breakdown. I had resisted that. I acquiesced to go to see a counsellor, provided by work throughout the assistive program, because I saw all these forests deep in national parks or on private land, or Aboriginal land, that some of which I'd helped to protect, and they were all burning.
Mm.
And I think we are squeezed between the need to quickly stop bulldozing and logging, particularly the old trees, the remnant forest, the mature trees with all those biodiversity and carbon and rainmaking values, and use them to soak up carbon, and the growing risk from bushfire and drought, which means even if we do all of that, we can still have massive fires, which, will destroy those forests, and they probably won't come back to what they were. So I think we have a decade or two here and around the world, and it really, I think that's why I sort of collapsed. I thought so much of the work I and so many, many, many people, of course the forest campaigners, but farmers who are trying to make it pay to have more trees on the land, graziers, loggers who are trying to get out of native forest logging plantations, poor people in government and ministers who just scratch their head, who say it's too hard to solve the forest wars. People in banks, super funds, trying to work out how to make money out of doing good by forest, not bad. And there's so much interest now in the natural capital of trees that we haven't solved a market failure, that trees, as you say, don't have a value. So people think just knocking down doesn't hurt.
Yeah, well, that, exactly. I mean, Sibylle do that. I mean, trees have a value. Trees have a value beyond sawn timber or pulp.
That they absolutely do. And actually, There are so many ways that trees are really good for our health, but even from a financial point of view, the health costs of not having the trees are enormous. So when we look at the health costs of increasing heat waves and increasing hot weather, we know that these are really significant and they are going to continue to increase with the heat we're already going to see with climate change. But if we don't take the actions to slow and manage that by stopping fossil fuel extraction and preserving trees and forests, those costs are going to be enormous. So the potential saving by actually looking after country, including trees, is really huge in terms of the health costs. And those are other health costs, that so those are ones to do with heat, so emergency presentations, hospitalizations, but air pollution is another one where having trees are really good at processing the air and making it clean for us to breathe, and actually taking out some of the pollutants, including some of the ones that come from car exhausts. And the air pollution that we have is already causing at least 3,000 early deaths a year. So actually reversing that has a potentially big financial as well as health benefit.
Let's take some calls to Jeff from Walpole. G'day, Jeff.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, your comment?
Yeah, look, I'm really interested in your conversation because I'm a farm forester. I grow eucalypts for high-value sawdust production.
Yep.
Both in plantation and management of regenerated forests, or what you might call regrowth forests.
Yep.
And I've planted about 350,000 trees, in fact, lost count. And I want to say that I really get annoyed. I think we've got it all wrong in our current view towards trees and forestry particularly, because forestry is a science. It's guided by science, the science of forestry, and it can be studied at university. And it's as much about growing trees as it is cutting them down. But the Greens have hijacked the whole concept here in WA, at least. They, you know, somehow think it's terrible to manage forests for a sustainable, you know, building products such as timber.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas, you know, land clearing for agriculture, for urban settlement and for mining is far worse than any sustainable forestry operation.
Yeah. No, I think that's a powerful point. Thanks, Jeff. Stuart, can I put that to you too? I once did a program, I remember, on fish and fishing, where the view was put that, you know, we were fishing the oceans unsustainably and that people in the future would have to get used to the idea if they wanted to eat fish. Look, there'll always be some wild fishing. That will continue. But in the main, if people were wanting to eat fish, you should get used to the idea that they'd be farmed fish, that fish would be, you know, grown in that way for human consumption. In relation to timber and timber production, which, you know, we all love. We love timber and we love a timber floor. We love timber frames for housing and all of these things. Timber's hugely useful. The fact is we are going to have to get used to the idea that unless we can supply that industry out of plantation timber, it's simply not going to be available, is it?
Well, look, I agree with Jeff on a lot from Walpole. And of course, WA is going through the process of shutting down their native forest logging, Kauri and the Jarra and the Murray in the southwest. So I'm assuming Jeff may be in that sector or impacted for it, and it is a very emotional time, and there's a feeling of a great lack of fairness and equity from loggers who are involved in Western Australia and Victoria who are involved in the phase out. So I absolutely get the emotion. My dad and his family were involved in logging on the side as a kid, and so I understand how deep this anger goes. That's one. We don't have enough wood, timber, fibre in Australia.
No.
And
we're net importers, aren't we?
Well, I think we import about 30%.
Yeah.
We export a lot. As you said earlier on, we export a lot of, including native forests from our forests and plantations, exported as pulp. It's bad economics and certainly bad for the environment. And it's not building our own domestic manufacturing wood production facilities. I think we need our own. I think your point, actually, I was thinking about this when I saw some media this week about the focus for fish production should be aquaculture on land,
for example,
and dissociated from wild caught fishing. I think there's a similar argument about what's the future of our timber and fibre production? And we're progressively taking it out of native forests and doing it in plantations or fit-for-purpose built forests. I think that's the only way we'll ever have a domestic, sovereign, secure timber and fibre sector if we divorce it from our forests, because those forests provide all those other values.
Could Australia get to that point, do you think, that we would have a sovereign a sovereign timber production industry where we were able to supply our needs from plantation timber?
I'd love to think so, but we're certainly not on the track now. I talked to a fair few people in the forestry and plantation sector. Plantations generally do not pay without major public subsidies. Mm-hmm. And we have not accommodated enough of cleared agricultural land, particularly lower value grazing land, for timber. And as Jeff said, you can do it in terms of farm forestry in smaller numbers, smaller area, or in vast plantations, might all be pine or blue gum. But we need a large, large area, tens of thousands of hectares of more plantations. Yet our plantation estate nationally has been shrinking in the last decade. And that's, I have a lot of in principle support for the 1 billion tree visioning campaign by the Australian Forest Products Association. You know, there's stuff we clearly don't agree on, but on plantations and a common view on plantations' future, we have to invest in that much, much more money than is being put into it by the public sector and the private sector.
Mm. We're talking trees tonight. Dr. Stuart Blanche, who you just heard, a conservation scientist with the World Wildlife Fund in Australia. Also joining us in the studio here, Dr. Sibyl Day, who's a child and adolescent psychiatrist and mental health researcher and part of the advocacy group Doctors for the Environment Australia. If you had a pitch, Sibyl, about trees and health, because this is a thing I know people, you know, love to picnic beneath a tree, but you're saying something much more profound here, aren't you?
Look, yes, there are so many benefits of trees. I mean, in terms of the mental health benefits, we know that people who spend more time in nature and people who have more access to tree-lined areas, and that's both with allowing for open space that doesn't have trees versus ones that do, are healthier, and that there are lower rates of a number of mental health problems in places where there are more trees. The other thing is that a lot of people are now starting to really notice for themselves that they feel better, and I certainly subscribe to that when they spend time in nature. There are other sort of health benefits that are linked to that we don't necessarily think of. So one of the ones that's got really strong science behind it is that schools that have trees around them and have less air pollution, kids learn better. So children in primary school, there's hard evidence for that. Yeah. Multiple studies have been reviewed internationally, peer-reviewed literature. Mm. So there's a big study in Barcelona where they had 39 schools across the area and found that basically the schools where there was less car pollution and more trees, that they actually had a big improvement in those children that were in those schools. They were, over a period of several years, actually learning better, behaving better, focusing better. So it'd be really interesting to see what would happen if we could get more trees around schools and less vehicle pollution, because there's really good evidence for that.
In a climate sense, climate change and you know, looking ahead into the future, Stuart, should we be using more timber or less?
Oh, more timber. More timber.
It's got to be better, isn't it? We should be building more things out of timber, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and look, because I don't have enough on my plate, Philip, I volunteer to sit on the board of the Forest Stewardship Council for Australia and New Zealand. It's a great NGO, and it brings in people from the forest logging plantation industry, the foresters, social science area, and environment groups.
Yeah.
And I'd love to talk about how we can grow more wood that has the highest level of certification. It's great. So I'd encourage all your listeners, if you're going to buy wood, buy Australian. That's number one. That is FSC certified. I personally think that is a high standard. But, and I think we need a lot more wood.
But the main message is you shouldn't feel guilty about using wood. You should be using more of it. Is that the message?
Well, it absolutely depends on its source. So certainly don't buy wood that's not certified. And I think the best, highest certification standard is FSC. There are other ones that also do, you know, jobs in this regard. But I think FSC certified plantations will be in the future and now the sort of a high watermark in terms of the more discerning sort of commercial real estate, people who want to support more wood. They want to support farmers and loggers and plantation operators and haulers who make their income from logging. And I think we need to vastly expand plantations. I'll just go back to something Jeff said. He was right. I mean, bulldozing a forest and replacing it with a whole paddock of grass to grow sheep, or that is the worst for biodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
Having cattle running under partly cleared forest, that's better. Logging forest and letting the trees grow back over 100 years, that's better. But the Rolls-Royce option, the best option, is to let the forest mature as they are, don't keep logging them, and expand the area of farm, forestry and plantations and high-tech innovative wood solutions, wood manufacturing solutions. That's the only way now, frankly, we'll ever get a sovereign timber industry and fibre industry, is if we dissociate getting the timber and fibre from our native forest and concentrate on land that is cleared and that we can grow back. And to do that, the only way that's going to happen is that those plantation operators have to be able to access good carbon and biodiversity credits and public funding from state and federal governments to subsidise them, because they don't make money. Otherwise, people will continue to go down to their wood suppliers and buy, you know, rainforest timber from all over the world that is grown and logged in poor environmental conditions than ours.
Okay, let's take some more calls. John from the Blue Mountains. Hi, John.
G'day.
Hi.
Yeah, it's interesting, this discussion. Many years ago, and I do mean a couple of decades ago now, I live in Lower Blue Mountains, went to an ecological conference at the Springwood Civic Centre, as it was then.
Yep.
And there was a couple of very nice young gentlemen sitting at a table espousing on the need to look after the mountains and the trees there, which we all agree with. But I terrified them by saying, imagine if you cut down all the trees on the planet, and they nearly fell off their chairs. I said, no, don't get me wrong. The idea is that you then replace what the trees do with things that are made in factories and cost that out. And when you work out how many billions and trillions of dollars it would cost to do what trees do, then divide it by the number of trees, you'll then work out how much a tree is actually worth, or actually how much it costs.
Yeah.
It's worth a lot more than it costs.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thanks, John. Yeah, I like that. Stuart, I'm sure you'd like that. Sabelle, you'd like that too. Scott from Rolleystone. G'day, Scott.
How you doing?
Not bad.
I heard the call earlier about the Greens' position on forestry management. So I had a quick look at the policy positions on the Greens website for my state in Western Australia, where it's clearer, stated more clearly, but also federally. They're actually quite supportive of the kind of forestry management that they were accused of being opposed to. And this is pretty consistent with the Greens. I don't think they get everything right, but there's a lot of gullible people that get told the Greens have a particular position, they don't bother to check, and they just run with that belief, but it is factually inaccurate.
Yep. Okay. All right, Scott, thank you. Sabelle, you want...
I was just thinking of a couple of other benefits and things that we're perhaps not aware that trees do. So one of them is their ability to help clean water.
Yeah.
So Melbourne's water has actually got a significant improvement because of the amount that's drawn from areas with forest. And that actually is saving people in Melbourne significant amounts of money, because it's actually much cheaper to process water from that's been already partly processed by trees than to take it all the way through just with artificial processing. So it's a bit like what the caller was describing, where we're actually harnessing the benefits of trees. And clean drinking water is hugely important for our health. Globally, it makes an enormous difference, and it's also relevant here.
Are we about to see an explosion of tree planting, Stuart, because of carbon credits?
Definitely. Is that
going to be a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it depends. To be honest, a lot of people in the forestry and plantation sector really don't like me and people like me. So when I talk to them, I always try to listen, because I'm not from a forest ecology background. I'm not a forester. I love their passion for trees and their ability to work out how many trees you could produce on a hectare. But then quickly you get to, you need the right trees with the right nutrient and water availability in the soils and in the right place so they don't like suck up too much water from the aquifers or the nearby wetlands or streams. They don't create too much fire risk for neighbouring farms or schools or homes or World Heritage listed national parks.
Mm.
So I don't think as a nation we have mapped out adequately where, you know, another, say, 50,000 hectares or 100,000 hectares or more of plantations need to go. I think we've got about 2 million hectares of plantations nationally, mainly pines, but also hardwood. If we need to increase, you know, get well above the 2 million hectares, where does it go?
Where does it go?
Obviously, yeah, you need your social license. You need to not make things worse by planting trees that a lot of them die, and that's happened in Queensland as part of their transition out of logging and Southeast Queensland, it hasn't worked. But you also need the rural community to see benefit in it. And then where do you harvest the trees? Where do you take them to? If the mills that are currently up in the mountains for native forest logging, they're not necessarily near where new plantations will need to be harvested in 10 years' time. So a lot of thought needs to get into it. And there has been a long decades of wars, as you said. It's hard to sit down and have to say, well, how do we come up with a plan that ends the native forest logging era that is just and fair but actually creates more wood supply, more high-value wood, encourages innovation, encourages investment, reduces imports of wood, and reduces exports of our good-quality forests going out as a pulp?
Yep.
It's hard to have those discussions.
Yeah, okay. Stuart Blanche is with us, conservation scientist with World Wildlife Foundation Australia. Also, Dr. Sibel Day, child and adolescent psychiatrist and part of the group Doctors for the Environment Australia. Sibel, how about this? These are some stats that might make you feel nostalgic. Apparently less than 20% of children today climb a tree or have ever climbed a tree, compared with 65% of adults who climb trees during their childhood. You see, I think about that and it makes me weep because that's... We've lost connection with trees, haven't we? What's wrong with kids climbing trees? It's fantastic.
Look, I think you're right that actually kids feeling confident and happy to be outside in nature doing things like climbing trees is really wonderful. Mm. And in most situations, it's actually pretty safe, and often people overestimate the risks.
No,
you
it's
do
not.
Have
it's
to be
dangerous.
Sensible.
It's dangerous, but that's part of growing up too.
Yeah, look, to some degree, but actually there's lots of benefits to children for being in nature and from things like climbing and their coordination and also socially. And as I was saying, there's also benefits in terms of brain development from being in clean air.
Hmm.
And that connection is really important. So as we were talking about before, that sense of seeing and understanding that trees are really helping to look after us is also important. So when we think about how much you can benefit from spending time in nature and how much we can learn from traditional owners who have been looking after country for millennia, including looking after trees. Now, I think one of the things that didn't come up so much around what's going on with native foresters at the moment is that we've still been burning native forest and counting that as renewable energy. So that's only recently changing. So I think we really need to be valuing our forests and valuing our trees.
Mm.
And I appreciate that we need to have plantations and things like that, but actually we also need to be keeping the ones that we've got and really noticing how much they're doing for us.
Mm. Ray says on the text line, Stuart, maybe you'd like to take this on and Sibel too, jump in. If you stop land clearing within 2 decades and bring in 200,000 people a year, which Australia is trying to do, where are you going to grow the food? Is this a false dichotomy, Stuart, or not?
Well, they're both important. You know, we'll continue to have a high immigration rate under whoever's in government. So generally most people don't go to in our food-producing areas in inland Australia. So we will reduce, well, to be honest, over the last 20, 30 years since 1990, the rate of land clearing has fallen enormously through all sorts of reasons. It'll continue to fall, but it's stubbornly stuck now at about 600,000 hectares a year. And we need that accommodation, particularly in Queensland with the beef industry. If they're saving all the trees on their land and they're doing it, they're producing benefits for all of the rest of us, Aussies, we need to be paying them better, or they need to be getting more money from supply chains or banks or government or whoever. I don't think it means that we have to do one or the other, like bring more people into Australia or stop land clearing. We absolutely have to get out of deforestation, particularly the higher value forest. Where you put people, it's probably not my area to comment on, but most people don't want to immigrate into areas where...
I think sometimes the argument is a bit false. Yeah, go on, Sybil.
I just wanted to add, just in terms of food security, actually trees are critically important for pollinators.
Yeah.
So actually, if we don't have enough trees, we won't be able to produce enough food because we won't have enough pollinators. So that is actually a... And in terms of having access to food, it's not just about having enough cleared land. It's also how we manage the land.
Hmm.
Yep.
Gary on the Hume, g'day, Gareth.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad.
Yeah, I see there's one problem with tree clearing and that no one's picked up on. Hmm. When they make a new subdivision, they just get there and rip them all down and mulch them all up instead of making use of them because it seems a bit of a waste, really. You know, so if they can think, like, even if someone wants trees there, maybe a tree they could put there for parrots and that, even though it's going to...
It's true. Every new subdivision is totally raised, isn't it, to the ground?
Yeah. So no one's actually thought of really actually using them because the almighty dollar for the government and the developers, and they just take the easy way out.
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks, Gary. Trudy's from Bendigo. G'day, Trude. Sorry you had to wait. I'm waiting on there. Trudy, hello.
That's all right. No worries at all. Just want to congratulate you all for a very important discussion tonight and absolutely fantastic discussion and the call back as well. I just want to say a few things briefly, and that is all politics aside, Green, Labor, Liberal, whatever. I think in our modern world, we've lost touch with the fact that the reality that those old forests are our life support systems. Tree is life. If we lose them or any more, then no trees, no nothing, as has been evidenced in other places in the world where they've deforested long ago. And also, it takes up to 500 years to form 1 inch of topsoil, I believe. I'm not sure if that's right. I'll stand to be corrected there. But, you know, all this business about we've got to go in and clear the understory so we don't have these huge fires. If we clear the understory, we upset the whole ecological system and we lose that ability to maintain the topsoils. And also trees mitigate floods as well. Forests take up 85% of floodwaters, whereas cities take up 15% if they're lucky. And that's another really important thing with all the flooding that's starting to occur on a more regular basis in the world. We need to look at all those things. Tree is life. And it's got nothing to do with whether you're green, blue, black, you know, red, whatever.
Sure.
We need to be realistic and remember that the forests are our life support systems, full stop. Mm. We have to look after them in every way we can.
Thanks, Trudy. Well said. Good on you. 1-300-800-222. Sybil, where are we internationally in terms of awareness about these things?
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I think what we've seen in terms of awareness about the environment and awareness about the importance of nature, that actually people are becoming more and more aware in Australia and more aware internationally. So when there's been a survey done of young people that included a lot of Australians, almost half of them were 57% of them were really very, very worried about climate change and about the impacts on the environment, including loss of trees. And actually, it's even 59% that felt betrayed by government's lack of action on that. So there's certainly lots of concern in Australia. Health professionals tend to be more concerned than the rest of the population. And that's probably partly because, as we saw from the IPCC report yesterday, it's really clear that we need to be taking action to protect health. And keeping trees and having enough tree cover in places like areas of new development is part of that and is really important.
Mm. Just a few things before you go, Stuart. What's the oldest tree in Australia? A Huon pine in Tasmania, is it?
Yes, I've seen various estimates, 2,000 or 3,000 years old, but there's a group of cloned male Huon pines.
Yeah.
So it's one tree that they think has been growing, you know, sequentially for more than 10,000 years.
Dear me.
That's old.
Is the Huon pine in that sense finished? Are we the last generation that will see it, do you think? It's not being logged anymore. It's not being logged anymore, is it?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, they're down there in Tassie, some of those deep, dark, there's half of Tasmania's in protected areas, a lot of those Huon pine country. So the further south you go, the better protected in those deeper gullies from climate change.
What's the tallest
tree? Never lose hope, Philip.
What's the tallest tree in Australia?
The Centurion. Massive, massive Mountain Ash down in Tassie, I'm pretty sure.
That's the one.
99.8 metres, if I remember. Like massive, almost 100 metres. Ginormous.
It's not the tallest tree in the world, isn't it? But it's up there. It's getting there.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think the Mountain Ash, and there's been some great reports by researcher Jen Sanger from Tassie on land, you know, carbon and some of the big trees in Tassie, Victoria, New South Wales. I'd urge people to go on a web and look at it. But documenting the big trees and photographing them, some of those Mountain Ash, you know, they are the tallest flowering plants in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the sequoias in California are taller, but they're pines, not flowering.
They're not flowering.
They're all massive. You know how small you feel when you're sitting at the base of a massive old
tree. Yeah. The theory about how trees talk to each other is not any longer a kind of wacky green theory, is it? As far as I understand, Sibel Stewart?
Well, the wood wide web is much talked about.
I mean, they've done a lot of science on it, haven't they? They've done a lot of science on it. And trees do apparently speak to each other.
The fungi, mycorrhiza, connecting the roots help trees communicate. I noticed there was a review article, I think in the International Journal of Science last month, saying there's probably not enough evidence yet to unequivocally say all trees communicate that well. On old trees look after young trees, or trees under attack are helped by trees not under attack by insects. But it's fascinating to me. We look at a tree and you think it's its own thing, but it's the forest collectively together, a bit like you talk about the Great Barrier Reef, one big organism. There's some, you know, in the US there's studies that show trees stretching hectares. They're all connected. It's one tree with many, many tree stems sticking up. So I just think we're going to find out so much in the future, and it will affect decisions about land clearing and logging and growing trees, and even having a tree in your backyard and how they communicate and help each other as the climate worsens, or more drought or more insect attack. And you can always learn from trees, I reckon.
This is the thing, Sibel, isn't it? We're going to have to, the way that we've been talking about tonight, come to regard a tree as not just an opportunity or a nuisance or something that's, because there are so many of them, don't worry about it.
I think we really are going to need to understand how valuable they are and how they can protect us. And one other way that I haven't got to that I think is worth mentioning is we've had huge mental health and physical health impacts from COVID-19.
Yeah.
We know that habitat loss, including clearing trees, is one of the major factors driving increases in diseases like COVID-19 and Ebola, because the frequency of those diseases that cross over from animals to humans goes up. So actually protecting forest and habitat for animals and making sure there's enough space is one of the ways that we can help give ourselves a better chance about infectious diseases as well.
Because there's a lot of pessimism, isn't there, Stuart, about our ability to cope with climate change. This is one area where we could actually really realistically be optimistic, couldn't we?
Yes. I was a freshwater ecologist, worked on the Murray-Darling Basin, and I sit back and think, I don't actually know what we can do to help on the Murray-Darling Basin and the world's great rivers, of course, for climate impact. I have more hope around trees than like rivers or coral reefs.
Yep.
Because trees grow, seeds can stay in the soil for decades and resprout, including in Australia from fire. You get an occasional downpour and up they come. It's amazing. And trees can withstand massive, you know, fires, wind, deluges.
And it's in our capacity to A, look after them, and B, plant them, and C, protect them. We've got to go because sadly this conversation has reached the end of its canopy as well. Thank you to both of you. Dr. Stewart Blanche, conservation scientist with the World Wildlife Foundation in Australia, and Dr. Sibel Day from the University of New South Wales. Thanks to both of you. Thanks, Sibel.
Thanks very much.
And thanks, Stuart.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for the texts and calls too. I know it's a big topic, but it's invigorating talking about it, isn't it?
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.